Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 151 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and what's going on with online porn already. Oh yeah, this is going to be quite an episode. Before we start, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. You won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review this podcast because, honey, this one's going to burn them up. We have got amazing data that we're going to be sharing with you. So rate and review the podcast on iTunes because I'm waiting to hear from you. All right. It's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So I'm trolling along the New York Times and I hit this fabulous piece that was written all about teenagers learning online porn. What the heck? And so, I mean, it's a very extensive article. And in it, I always like to be able to go to the main, most credible academician who's studying all of this stuff so that this individual, in this case, Dr. Bryant Paul, can share what's going on here? Just suss through the data and just say, what's the real bottom line here with online porn? So we are so pleased to have Dr. Bryant Paul with us. Now, he is an associate professor in Indiana University's Media School. His research and teaching interests include the nature and effects of sexual messages in the media. Oh, yeah, that must keep you busy. It's like endless. Media and sexual socialization, evolutionary psychological explanations for media effects, and First Amendment law and policy. Was a co-producer of the Emmy-nominated documentary Hot Girls Wanted and served as a primary research scientist for the Netflix documentary series Hot Girls Wanted, Turned On. He continues to publish in academic journals across the disciplines of communication, human sexuality, and social psychology. Ah, Professor Paul, welcome to the Her podcast.
With you today.
So, Professor Paul, what is going on with all of this? This online porn and teenagers. Let's kind of look at what you have discovered in your own research. Give us some of the data that we can chew on and probably be utterly shocked by.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and it's very easy to hear about this topic and then immediately become very alarmist, you know, without even really considering what the data looks at, especially because, you know, we're talking about kids and sex here. And so it's one of those things that really lets your mind, it can really run away with itself. It can be a difficult topic to consider because on one level you're saying, yeah, this is obviously a hugely important thing that we need to consider. At the other, like, the data tells us it's maybe not quite as depressing as we might have thought. What I mean by that is, for instance, first age of exposure, we see that the average age of first exposure to pornography, online pornography, which is how it happens now, has kind of remained pretty steady at around 13 to 14 years old, even after the internet started to become popular and a popular source of sexually explicit media. That said, the average age for girls, young girls that have seen sexually explicit media, has come down. It was probably pre-internet around 16, and it's moved down maybe to around 14 now. But the age for first exposure for boys has remained kind of at the same level. But what we do see is most of that first exposure, for instance, is unwanted. It wasn't like they were looking for this content. People that we interviewed and that we surveyed, for instance, they reported about 92% of girls that we interviewed and surveyed, they reported it was unwanted first exposure. 72% of boys that we, teenage boys that we talked to, were, you know, said that they were exposed by somebody either sending them content or they stumbled upon it, that kind of thing. The biggest concern we have with this exposure, you know, it's not necessarily just, you know, going to ruin a person just because they've, a young person, just because they've seen this content. It has a lot to do with, and we're finding this more and more, with how we respond to it and whether they're sort of prepared for the experience. And that doesn't mean, you know, going through it with them and showing them, you know what they're going to be seeing, but so that they have, that there's an open conversation and you're not creating some kind of a forbidden fruit when they do get exposed to this type of content. That's kind of one of the things that parental mediation models really seems to support.
Well, you know, you said, well, in the article it said, there's a decent chance your parents don't think you're watching porn. Preliminary analysis of data from a 2016 Indiana University survey of more than 600 pairs of children and their parents reveals a parental naivete gap. Half as many parents thought their 14 and 18-year-olds had seen porn as had, in fact, watched it. And depending the sex act, parents underestimated what their kids saw by as much as 10 times. Okay, we got clueless parents out there. What's going on?
Well, so, you know, what we see is
seriously, by 10 times. Give me a break. What is going on out there?
What's happening is the more specific you get as far as the sexual behaviors that we ask the parents and kids about, the less the parents think that their kids have seen it. So, you know, when we just said, has your kid seen porn, they underestimated it by about half, right? When we started asking, well, have they seen facials? Have they seen, you know, coercion was the one that it was, you know, 10 times more likely that a kid reported seeing coercion. Now, the important thing to remember is that's not as though that the majority of kids have seen coercion, but that parents really underestimate the amount of coercion those kids that have seen pornography are seeing.
Huh. Okay. So, you know, most parents out there are falling off their chairs going, oh my God, I had no idea. I mean, seriously, it said the Indiana University National Survey of Teenagers asked about other sex behaviors as well. Though the data have not been fully analyzed, preliminary findings suggest that of the teenagers who have had sex, around 1/6 of boys said they had ejaculated on someone's face or choked a sex partner. Oh, dear God.
Right.
The survey didn't define choking. Jesus. You know, but the high school and college age students that were spoken to referred to it as anything from placing a hand gently on a partner's neck to squeezing it. Okay, help me with this. Professor
right.
Paul, help. What is going on here? I mean, how are they translating this? This is their idea. They see it. They emulate it. What's happening?
Well, you know, so the way we look at it is it's, you know, and again, keep in mind, this most of this data is correlational, right? So we don't, you know, and because it's pretty difficult to bring kids in and say, okay, who hasn't seen pornography? All right, now you watch some pornography. And now what do you think? The human subjects committees at universities tend to look pretty negatively upon that type of a method. But so what we end up having is a lot of correlational data and then data that we have of adults seeing a lot of this content and their potential, the effects it might have on their attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. And what we see is that what I call a powerful, if limited, model of effects. There are definitely those kids that are going to be exposed to sexually explicit content that have very few, if any, alternative models, very little experience, and that's one of the big problems is that, you know, we teach sex, even if we're teaching sex education and talking about how reproduction works and those types of things, we're not talking about pornography and we're not talking about the explicit sex act. We're not talking about pleasure and sexual pleasure and those types of things. And so where do young people that are interested in these types of things, where are they going to get their ideas, their scripts about what, you know, what's involved in sexual pleasure and sexual play and sexual behavior? The explicit.
Well,
part,
well, you,
know,
you
the,
mentioned
the
this whole issue of sexual pleasure and sexual play and behavior. Well, there was a British study in 2016 It's a survey of over 1,000 11 to 16-year-olds in Britain. And of the roughly half who had seen pornography, 53% of boys and 39% of girls said it was, and I quote, realistic. And in a recent Indiana University national survey, only 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 4 girls believed that women in online porn were not actually experiencing pleasure. As one suburban high school senior boy told the author of this article recently, "I've never seen a girl in porn who doesn't look like she's having a good time. Help me. What happened to real? What is going on with that?"
Well, again, like you said, I mean, especially those kids that don't have, you know, when we're not providing any alternative, more legitimate, more reasonable information, where are they going to get this information from? Right. Where are they going to form their scripts about sexual pleasure? Because that's the thing in mainstream media representations. They don't keep filming once the lights turn off and the sheet goes over the body. And so those kids that are looking for information, they typically are going to be more likely to rely on explicit sources. And the explicit sources that they're relying on are pretty inaccurate in terms of what feels good, what people like. So they internalize those scripts that they're exposed to. It makes those types of behavior more likely to occur. Please do note, though, I mean, again, this doesn't happen with every kid. And, individual differences across kids certainly are going to affect whether or not they incorporate these scripts. But, again, if they're constantly being exposed to these types of scripts and those types of scripts and the memes that are associated with these scripts start to become popular and more popular mainstream, media sources, like adult sort of cartoons like Family Guy and Rick and Morty and these other kind of popular sources, it reinforces that these are the types of memes that are popular and that they should be participating in.
Huh. Well, so I assume, you're very well acquainted with this porn literacy program emanates from the official title is The Truth About Pornography, a pornography literacy curriculum for high school students designed to reduce sexual and dating violence. And it's a recent addition to Start Strong, a peer leadership program for teenagers headquartered in Boston's South End and funded by the city's public health agency. What is this porn literacy program's aim? What does it really aim to do?
Well, it's the point is to, I think, number one, to have that conversation about pornography, about the potential effects, what it is, and what the reality behind how pornography is made and how it potentially has how it has the potential to influence you, watching it just like it's really an extension of the media literacy movement, which is something that is becoming more and more popular and more important as, we continue to live more and more media lives, especially young kids. And that's really the primary source of socialization about the world. It is intended to have a legitimate, honest conversation and about this topic, get them thinking about it. Get them thinking about where the content comes from, who is actually involved in the making of it, what the average person who doesn't look at it with a critical eye might pick up from it, and what they might learn about and start to incorporate in their own attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors.
You know, when I'm sitting back and I'm thinking about that, and then I go back to, you probably remember yours too, sort of a sex ed class, there was like one...
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, it was painful. I mean, there was, the nervous giggles throughout the room and and it was all sort of a strange, very sterile, technical, description. In our case, it was delivered by a physiology professor who was just, he was terrible at this. Just terrible. And I even remember his name. Oh my God, it was so bad. And you just walked out of there. You're like, okay, I get the, A ergo B, and I get how everything literally works anatomically, but that sure as hell didn't explain the other 98% of it. I just, you know.
That's exactly right. And then, and where then? I mean, we actually had a little bit better. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we had for sex education, sort of people. We had the Planned Parenthood people come in, and then I think we had the a religious organization come in, and sort of an abstinence-only education come in, and they both got to sort of say their piece. But again, that we're still not talking about the issue of pleasure, the issue of power, the issue of relationship management, and what role sex is supposed to play in it. And so, where do kids, or where are they likely to learn that type of thing? And the fact is, you know, media models that don't worry about, you know, hurting feelings and offending and making kids uncomfortable, that's where they're going to be looking. That's where that information comes from.
Well, that's where they're going to swipe right, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, now we have the age of, you know, digital technology. And how do you now try to resolve this when literally it's at your fingertips? You can just, you know, iPhone it or Android it or, you know, whatever you want. Remember the old days, right, where you had to, you know, very secretly try to score that magazine and hide it under your bed kind of thing. Oh, yeah. And,
right.
and that's just all dead now. I mean, it's more like, you know, you can access anything you want to at your fingertips, number one. Number two, you can also access any hookup you want. You can't even say relationship anymore, going out or meeting up or whatever. It's a hookup. So given that, you know, what have you found, you know, is a way to begin to resolve some of this, especially for nervous Nelly, you know, parents out there now who are sitting there going, oh my gosh, as they're listening to all of this, what do you do in the world of technology that we have now?
The first thing to do is take a deep breath, right? And realize that, you know, this has been the case throughout human history, that new technology has come up, and every time it happens, parents have freaked out and thought, this is the end of the world. It's, you know, it's all over. This is the one. This is the one that's going to absolutely ruin it. And yes, the technology has become much faster, much more available. But what you will notice is that the technologies that the media technologies that survive and become really popular are the ones that allow us to do things that we never would have done, but to basically make what we've always done, and that is, you know, dating, trying to find partners, and that kind of thing, makes them easier and faster and more efficient and cheaper. And so, you know, the fact is, I teach a class called Sex in the Media every semester here at IU, and every semester students come in, and if we were really going to hell in a handbasket, the things that they would be saying now would be quite a bit different than they were saying 5 years ago, and you don't see that. They're not insane. They haven't lost the plot completely. It is having an impact. What it has created among kids, and this is one of the real, I think, unmentioned aspects of this, there is a lot of anxiety because life has become really performative for them. You know, everything is about, like you said, getting somebody to swipe right or swipe left and continue on. And so life is about your social media profile and the image that you project. And so that's where a lot of the anxiety comes in. How do I look? How am I being perceived by other people, because it's a 24-hour thing now, 7 days a week, when they're being, you know, they're performing and trying to put themselves out there. So one of the big problems is this anxiety that young people are developing because they feel like they're always on display and always have to be displaying, which I think is something we really should be giving a lot of attention to. The other thing is to keep in mind that, you know, it's not making them crazy. The fact is, some of these, some kids do respond badly to a lot of this stuff, but usually it's kids that we do see that have a propensity to be more sexually active in the first place.
Huh. All right. So we have that. We have the digital technology, and we have the challenge there, and we're definitely going to take a big, you know, breath, because you're absolutely right. I mean, you basically reframed it and saying, you know, this the only thing that's really different now is the fact that the technology has entered the picture. But really, we've always had this kind of challenge, you know, one way or the other.
Exactly.
What about social media, per se?
Yeah.
You've got Instagram pictures. You've got people doing the selfie thing. You know, you've got Facebooking. And all of that visual that kind of feeds into that. What's that about?
Well, yeah, I mean, what's happening, what seems to be happening there is that there is a tendency for, especially young people, there's always been a tendency for young people to want to be thought of as more mature and be, you know, and think of themselves as more mature and project a more mature image. That's always been happening, but now they can kind of, now they can control their presentation of themselves in a way that they really haven't for so many, in history before. You can create a persona, you can create, you know, a virtual image of yourself. There's a tendency for them to do that, to look out at, you know, images of famous people, see them, and whereas it used to be they could, you know, maybe dress that way, you know, locally, and you know, they talk about it with their friends. Now they're kind of presenting themselves in that way, and they want to be taken seriously. There's a tendency to want to live an older life before you even get there, because again, they see their friends doing it. It's how they present themselves. And there's a real tendency on the part of kids not to recognize, even though they say they do, that social media and social media presentations are a highlight reel, and that they're mediated. They are controlled by these kids. So they're not realistic, even if they think that they are realistic. Even the kids that are super into this type of these types of media and using social media, they often sort of, there's a disconnect between what they're presenting and what they they say, how it doesn't affect them, but the fact that actually it is kind of influencing their worldview and their perceptions of themselves and how other people see them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's so much poor body image out there. There's so much challenge to, you know, keep up with the next guy or gal in terms of appearance and sexuality and the rest of it, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of sexualizing going on. Men and yeah. women, yeah. you know, or really, quite frankly, adolescents and young adults who are really, especially the teenagers, who are trying to over-sexualize themselves, which is... you know, they consider to be the cool and hip thing to do, but, you know, here's my big but, you know, I'm sort of laughing. You and I are both laughing together saying, you know, I don't know, being older isn't all it's cracked up to be. So maybe you might want to enjoy your youth right now. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you're always in a hurry to get older until you're old.
Yeah, there's no question about it. See, this is why I like athletics so much. When I say athletics, I'm not talking about the Olympics here. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. you know, becoming physically active in a sport that turns you on. Oh, you know, I don't care what it is, if it's, you know, power walking, what do I care, or hiking, or just hopping on your bike, or, you know, skateboarding or something, just getting out of yourself like that and you know, putting that whole sexualizing thing to the side and really, for all intent and purposes, getting a life, for God's sake, you know, and perceiving your body as this extraordinary, you know, physiologic phenomenon that can do some pretty cool things. It can surf waves, it can swim, it can, you know, run, it could do all kinds of things that give you elation. You don't have to be sitting there surfing online porn to be able to feel as though you're getting anything out of life here. But getting back to that, to say the least, go ahead.
Sure. No, I completely agree with you. I mean, and that's one of the things that, you know, I talk to parents groups and I go to talk to parents in school districts and about these issues. And one of the things that I hear from parents is, well, I don't want them to fall behind socially. If I take away their social media, you know, I think I'm worried that they're going to fall behind socially and that wouldn't be fair to them. And I just can't believe that somebody really thinks, I mean, because what my response to that has become, show me one person who, because of some misconnection when they were in middle school, you know, didn't live as good a life as they could have. And, you know, we have this tendency to think that this, you know, that's their social existence and their relationship with their friends and their ability to perform and keep their social media streaks going is the most important thing, because that's really what's gonna, you know, that though you keep your friends as you get older, and you just don't see the support for that. So like you said, being involved in sports, having friends, being, you know, being taking their social media away, taking their devices away, is something that should be happening at this point. And I know that's not necessarily a popular thing. It wouldn't be a popular thing to say to a lot of teens, particularly young teens. But it is a really healthy thing to do, to show that, you know, you can live without it. When I've talked to young kids and they'll say, you know, I couldn't, but I had a girl a couple of weeks ago that said, I couldn't go to summer camp. I would lose my streaks on Snapchat. And I just thought, well, then that, to me in that situation, I probably take the technology away right then.
Oh yeah. There's no question about that. You know, the other piece, is really just, you know, sitting back and just taking it calmly. And really, I think parents do have to establish some limits and boundaries, but do it stealthily. You know, real hard to check your, you know, iPhone in the middle of ballet class. You know what I mean? Especially with Madame Overy, you know, who's your teacher, you know, with a little stick in her hand. You know, real hard to do that when you're bouldering. Real hard to do that when you're out there surfing. Just get out. I think what terrifies me mostly about the kids is, you know, we started talking about online porn. It's just online, period. You know, just get off, you know, that whole online thing and just, you know, start being able to have much more balance, you know, with all of this. And, you know, that still leaves us with the final, you know, piece, which is, how do kids really learn about, you know, about sex, about relationships? And I'm, you know, for the parents out there, hello, you're going to hate me, but here it comes. You know, a lot of this falls on you. Number one, you know, the kids are watching you, just saying, and you and, you know, the parental units in the house, are being eyeballed all the time. And if there's a lot of nice hand-holding and love and support and all the rest of it, well, that's just the best, right? And then an open, transparent dialogue where you're not afraid to be judged or to have someone, you know, wag a finger at you is very important. And quite frankly, this literacy project is extremely important too. Things like that where you're taught, you know, by very knowledgeable individuals to be able to message this to kids so that they can have a much better idea of what's real and what isn't. I think we need more resources and more support like that, especially in a day and age where if we don't do that, they're picking it up online, honey. And that takes us back to online porn. Professor Paul, your words of academic wisdom and advice are, you know, very, very much appreciated by our vast Her podcast audience, most of whom have been taking notes furiously. Everyone out there, we've been talking to Dr. Bryant Paul, who is associate professor in Indiana University's Media School, all about the effects of online porn and, quite frankly, how to have that conversation, especially with your kids. Dr. Paul, thank you so very much for being on the Her podcast. And for everyone else out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please just take a moment or two now and rate and review this podcast we just did with Dr. Bryant Paul on the effects of online porn, because this was absolutely amazing. So do it now. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD and Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.